Welcome to the Unlucky Sperm Club podcast, where we prove that you are not a victim of your circumstances, but a product of your choices. This podcast will help you live your best life, no matter where you started or where you're at right now. I am your host, Nelson Tressler. This episode is brought to you by I Got Smarter, Goals Elevated. I Got Smarter gives you all the tools, knowledge, and support to finally achieve your life's biggest goals. No matter what your goals are, I Got Smarter is the program to help you achieve them once and for all. Available at igotsmarter.com or the app stores. As always, on the Unlucky Sperm Club podcast, we are all about to get lucky with some words of wisdom from today's guest. After being mugged, she has recovered from severe PTSD, a broken neck, fractured skull, and three herniated discs to go on to win an Academy Award. And if that's not impressive enough, she has danced with John Travolta. I think that should be on all of our bucket list. She has turned this all into a novel and is now helping people all over the world with physical issues and trauma. Welcome my guest, Hannah Studley. How are you, Hannah?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on your show.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on. I mean, you've done a lot in your life, you know, and dancing with John Travolta, I think, has to be at the top of most of our list. What an incredible experience that was. But kind of to have our listeners get to know you, why don't you let us know who Hannah is from a, you know, a quick 10,000 foot view?
Sure. So I grew up in England. And I went to Manchester University, where I was having a good student time in the early 1980s. And that's where the first mugging happened. I was in a nightclub and some guy who wanted to dance with me put his hands where he shouldn't. I pushed him away. Next thing I knew, his hand was on the back of my head, smashed my head into a concrete pillar, fractured my skull. And I just kind of wrote that one off as kind of like, that's kind of what happens when you're a student, when you're drunk, when you're at a party, at a concert, you know, these are the kind of things that happen. And then about 3 years later, I was walking 6 o'clock in the evening near my home, and three men came out of the dark and slammed me on the ground and beat the living daylights out of me. I really thought I was going to die. I could hear myself screaming for my life, you know, like an out of body experience. And I thought, if they don't stop beating me, I'm going to die. And thank God I survived. I mean, the injuries weren't that severe, but it was the terror more of it that kind of like really got to me. And I got pretty messed up for about a year or so after that, just constantly reliving the terror and the fear, scared to go out, that kind of stuff. And so I moved down to London and thinking it would be different there. And I started working in the theater, and I was riding my bike home late one night from the theater, and a young boy came out of the dark and threw a child's bicycle at my head. The impact actually fractured my second and third vertebrae just below my skull. And he made off with it for about $70 the next day. He sold it. So after that one, I got really in a really bad way really quickly, because the all three kind of compounded this idea that the world is a very dangerous place. I was terrified to leave my bedroom, let alone my apartment. and if you could not have persuaded me otherwise, because I had evidence, you know, I had police reports and x-rays to prove it, and became quite agoraphobic and quite, you know, I was pretty much losing it in my head, you know, wasn't eating, wasn't sleeping, wasn't taking care of myself. And so from the first incident to the second was a period of about 6 years. And the PTSD was only just, as a diagnosis, only just going in the DSM at that time in 1984, that was. So nobody really knew what was going on. And I was really just given a cup of tea and kind of, you know, suck it up kind of treatment. And consequently, I got very isolated and very scared to tell anybody what was happening. Until I kind of got to the place where my brain kind of blew a fuse. And I just like the screaming in my head that had been going on for several years at that point just kind of stopped. And I finally asked for help. And that was kind of the beginning of my recovery, which then led to counseling work with helping other people with trauma, and also this career in the theater, which then turned into TV, then Hollywood, and this amazing career that I had.
Wow, incredible. So three times you were mugged, and over a span of how long?
I guess about 6 years.
Yeah, over 6 years.
Yeah.
And I mean, the subtitle of our show is "You're Not a Victim of Your Circumstances." Talk about that, because I mean, this didn't happen to you just one time. One bad thing didn't happen to you. I mean, three muggings happened to you, and everything that went along with that, and your mindset, and you know, the fear that was associated with that. Talk a little bit about that as far as that victim mindset. One, did you feel that at the time you were going through this? And then two, how did you overcome that mindset?
So I'm not sure I ever felt like a victim. I think I'm 5'11". I'm 6 foot as soon as I put shoes on. I was so confused. Why'd they pick on me? And, you know, like, it's not like I'm a little old lady, you know, like, you know, walking home from the grocery store. I'm, you know, I was a punk rocker. I had dreadlocks piled up on my head. You know, I was like quite, people always like thought I was, you know, an imposing figure if I walked in the room. So it was a confusion. I didn't understand what had happened. I didn't know why they picked on me. And the middle one, when I was mugged by the three guys, I actually, after the injuries had kind of healed a little bit, I went to the police station to tell them what happened. And they said, "Oh, we know who did it." And I'm like, "What?" Like, I wanted to like reach that policeman across the counter and like strangle him. He said, "Yeah, we've got more important things to deal with." So that kind of compounded the idea that I was dispensable, I wasn't important, and that didn't sit well with my pride, you know. And so the confusion of I just couldn't understand. I was so confused and just bewildered by the world that I was now living in. Didn't make any sense to me. So I never felt victim in terms of being weak, because I when you said victim, I was like, well, that's not me, I'm not weak, you know. These things just kept happening to me. It's just not fair. And so that kind of, I think that's why it took me a long time to ask for help. That kind of my pride conspired with the fact that I'd actually had previously trained as a counselor when I was in college. I trained with a rape crisis center in Manchester. and back in the early 1980s, there weren't that many places for women to come to for that kind of support. So it was very courageous kind of work, you know, going to court with women and talking to policemen and social workers and lawyers and nurses, explaining to them, you know, this new kind of understanding of like women's lives, and also going to like projects kind of community centers and explain to women that they could say no. And so I was very much the kind of champion, you know, like warrior type person. So for these things to have happened to me, it just was like, it blew my mind, literally. Yeah. So I think what really helped me get out of that place was when someone said to me, are you ready to let go of your story? Because I kind of created this story that I was the girl who'd been mugged three times. And once I was kind of starting like on my journey of recovery, I could get it into any kind of conversation. You know, with women, I could get them to be impressed by how courageous I was. And with guys, I could get you to like maybe feel sorry for me, you know, like, you know, I could throw in some football and some motorbikes and guitars and stuff, and I could like, you know, have you in the palm of my hand. So it was kind of like, it kind of became a currency, and it kind of became my identity.
Yeah.
So when this lady said to me, are you ready to let go of that story? At first I was very threatened by that. Because I'm thinking, well, if I let go, then who am I? That's really scary. And also I felt like she was saying to me, it didn't happen, it didn't hurt, and get over it. And I wanted to scream at her, it did happen, it still hurts, and I can't get over it. But then I started to see the story wasn't who I really am. And I think that's where the recovery really started, that I'm not my story, I'm not my thoughts. And so that's where I can see now that I was a victim of my thinking, actually more than the circumstances.
Yeah. And I want to dig in there. You said a few interesting things. So when that police officer told you that they had more important things to do, I think there's a lot of people out there that don't have that sense of importance, that don't equate with, you know, their identity and I'm a nobody, and they fall into that victim mindset. How did that make you feel whenever that police officer, you just went through a traumatic experience, you know, how did that make you feel when they pretty much minimized you to not being important and what happened wasn't important?
I was furious. I say, if he hadn't been a police officer, I would have, like, you know, grabbed him by the collar and punched him, I think. You know, I was like, how dare you? That was kind of my mindset. I know that's not maybe such a common one, and not everybody's way they would have reacted. But I think what's important in what I understand now is it doesn't really, it's not that it doesn't matter what it made me think. It's the fact that I got caught up in my thinking was actually the downfall, because I was having all these, like, outraged, you know, confused, angry thoughts, and I was listening to them. So as much as the original impact and violence and terror was, you know, should never happen to anybody, what I was doing with it in my head, whether it's you're beating yourself up and you're saying you're a nothing, or you're saying I'm too good, I'm too special, this shouldn't have happened to me, it doesn't really matter which end of the spectrum you are, getting caught up in the story, I was no longer present in my life. And that's why I was getting sick. And that's why I was losing touch with reality, because I was too up in my thinking and not, like, in my circumstances anymore.
Yeah, and I've used that in my own life. I started telling myself a different story from my childhood and what I had to overcome and what I had to deal with. And what I realized is you get to tell your own story. You get to tell yourself who you are and what you want to be and the things that you want to happen. So did you find yourself doing that? Did you find yourself telling your future story as you went through this and you got that advice?
Maybe in the beginning, because at the beginning of my recovery, which, I mean, I guess the recovery from that kind of lasted probably a good 10 years, you know, like fighting the PTSD, fighting the flashbacks, the being scared, like the hypervigilance of being outside of my apartment. Once I started going out, I get very jumpy and very nervous. And for the longest time, the sound of footsteps behind me would, you know, freak me out. But now when I work with people as a trauma counselor, I've learned not to take people back into the past, because the couple of times I did go for a professional medical help, that's all they kept saying to me is, tell us how you feel about it, talk about it. And like it was almost like embellishing this story by keeping repeating it. And I now see that that's not where the healing is. The past is gone, and it's not that it didn't happen or it didn't hurt, it did. But by seeing that I don't even have to create a new story, what I know now is that I'm not broken. There's nothing wrong with me. I don't need fixing. There's that pure part of me that no matter how much they beat me, they could not have touched. You know, as a human being, we all have that glorious part inside of us that cannot be touched. And so once I kind of, some very wise people started pointing me to that I wasn't broken, I didn't need fixing, that I was only experiencing my thoughts, a thought-created world. And because the nature of thought is it flows and it's always moving, new thought is always going to come in. I don't actually have to create anything. And that's really, for me, where the freedom has, like, really come in the last kind of 6 or 7 years of understanding how the mind works.
If you're ready to take your goal achievement to the next level and finally achieve your life's biggest goals, join us at igotsmarter.com and allow me to be your personal goal guide. Without a doubt, I Got Smarter is the best goal achievement program on the market. All of your goals are waiting for you. Let me and the I Got Smarter community help you live the life of your dreams. Join us at igotsmarter.com or download the app at the app stores. Yeah, I really love that, because in my childhood, the experiences that I had to go through and the trauma that I went through, whenever I became an adult and I moved away from that small town where all that happened, I never wanted to talk about my past. I wanted to essentially pretend that it didn't happen, because as soon as I got away from that, I wasn't that boy anymore. I didn't have to talk about my last name. I didn't have to do any of that. And, you know, with the fact that you're talking about, you know, what kind of strength did you gain from yourself? What did you learn about yourself as you overcame that? Because as I overcame it, I realized, you know, I love that you said that you weren't broken. And I really felt broken my entire you know, childhood because of who I was and what I represented. I really felt like damaged goods. So talk a little bit about that, because I think there's a lot of people who struggle out there that don't feel they're good enough, that feel like they're broken, that feel like, you know, no matter what they do, it's not going to do any good because of who they are and what they are. So talk a little bit about that.
Sure. I think the turning point for me was seeing that, understanding that I live in a thought created world. Like, up until this point, I thought that the way I felt was because of things on the outside, like the way, like, you talk to me, or that this person treats me, or the government, the weather, the neighbors, you name it. I thought those things were responsible for how I felt. You know, the policeman saying what he said, or it could be good things too. Like, you know, I feel good because I'm watching a funny movie. You know, what I started seeing, that's kind of what we call an outside in understanding. And when you have that belief system that you are who you are, or you are the way you feel because of those outside things, then you're kind of at the mercy of your circumstances, you know, how people treat you and how people talk to you and what actually happens. And that's kind of why I kind of got into a very dark place, because I was like, everybody else was on the hook for how I felt, even my circumstances and my past. Then once I started seeing that I'm always feeling my thinking. So if you think about it for a second, if you're having really low negative thoughts, you can't really be in a good mood, right? And conversely, if you're having really happy, funny thoughts, you can't be in a bad mood. So we're always feeling that thinking. So once I started seeing that, I started realizing that my experience is happening on the inside. It's actually an inside out experience. And as much as I thought it was like, other people not treating me right, it was actually my thoughts about them not treating me right that were creating my feelings and my experience. And so with that understanding, I don't have to change everybody and everything, which is what I was trying to do before, like move cities, move countries, you know, change things. You get it. Like, I don't want that in my life. I don't want that thinking in my head, you know, because I got into very much into all kinds of self-help techniques to try and keep the hygiene in my thinking, you know, really good, so I didn't end up back in that dark place. And then I started realizing I don't have to be frightened of my own thinking, even, because once you see that it's always moving, that the nature of thought is to flow, and it like clouds, you know, you don't have to encourage clouds to go by. They just move. The property of a cloud is it's going to move on. Traffic, a river, you know, whatever analogy works for you. And once I kind of saw that combined with the idea that I'm not broken, then as soon as the busy thinking that was driving me crazy starts to settle down, the amazing person that you are just naturally comes forward. We have this innate well-being and innate happiness. We are those things. What I learned is I didn't have to keep going somewhere else to find it anymore. Yeah. It was innately in me.
I love that. And one of my favorite concepts is that things only have the meaning that you're willing to give them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of like that. So when did you start giving the events that happened to you that caused you so much pain? When did you start giving them a different meaning? Have you given them a different meaning? It feels like you have. But and then how has that changed, you know, your outlook on life or your outlook on those events?
Yeah, I think the message I try and give to, you know, my clients or people who are listening is the work that I was doing to try and change my feelings and change my meaning about those things, the work was actually keeping me trapped in that story. Because trying to avoid negative thoughts, trying to ignore these bad feelings, that work was actually what was contributing to me staying in pain, because my injuries had actually healed, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago as it progressed. And yet I was still having these periods of like extreme chronic pain in my back and my legs. And I now know it's because of all that busy work I was trying to do. Like, one of my favorite analogies is a snow globe. Like, if I keep shaking up the snow globe, you know, I'm constantly living in that thought storm. But how do you stop a snow globe from swirling? Nothing. You stop, right? And as soon as I stopped trying to fix it, my thinking settled down, the pain went away. And I didn't have to create anything because it was already there. And I spoke at a conference at the university here where I live a couple of years ago, and it was, you know, there was a lot of professors of psychology and psychiatry and students there, and they could not understand how I could sit there in front of a big group of people and tell my story in quite a lot of detail and be okay. Because in traditional therapy, they're kind of coming from this idea that if you've had that much trauma, then you're going to be that much damaged, you know, because if there's a ratio, or if you've experienced this kind of trauma, you need that amount of treatment for that amount of time. And I'm sitting there saying, in my experience, that's not true, because everybody's living in their own thought created reality. Yeah. And what's traumatic to one person might not be traumatic to another person.
Right.
Because, so you can't really make a ratio judgment. And so once I saw that I wasn't what happened to me, and I'm not the thinking about what happened to me, my innate well-being created the new story. I didn't have to actually create it. It's because it was always there all the time. Right. And it just, like, that's what resilience is. It just naturally popped up to the surface once I let go of the fixing and the doing and the misunderstanding.
Yeah, I love that. So tell us, Hannah, what do you do when you have a bad day? Because I think there's a lot of people out there who are looking at perfection, and, you know, they have that bad day and they kind of throw their hands up and they think to themselves, they can't do this. And one of my, you know, favorite philosophies is I'm always striving for progress over perfection. How do you deal with that concept of, you know, when you have that bad day and you're not perfect?
Yeah. I'm human too. You know, we can all have a funky day. And what I think now is that I'm so grateful that I know it's going to pass. Like, all storms pass. You know, you think of every heartbreak you've ever had, it passed. Because thought is fluid and always flowing, that bad mood's going to pass. I can give you a quick example. The other morning I woke up and I had, I smell a bad smell, like a really unpleasant smell. And I thought, oh my gosh, what's that? Like, I know my bathroom's clean. Where's that coming from? And then I suddenly started thinking, maybe there's a cracked pipe in the building, you know, like maybe. And I thought, if there's a cracked pipe in the building, how would they find it? They'd have to start digging up the floor and they'd have to start digging up the walls. Oh my gosh, how can I live here? If they've dug up all the floor and the walls, I have to move out. Where am I going to live? And within like 30 seconds, I was homeless. Right. And that homeless feeling has a, you know, I mean, that kind of downward spiral thinking has a very heavy feeling to it. I know when I'm like heading towards the basement, because it feels heavy, it feels constricted. And now I know that that's what's happening. As soon as I realized what I'd done, I'd gotten caught up into some really ridiculous thinking. As soon as I woke up, I started laughing because it was so ridiculous, right? And I think it was actually the cat, you know, the cat had just taken a poop, you know, in the other room, in the litter box, and that probably what I smelled, and like, it was no big deal. But I innocently, and that's what I want to stress to the listeners, and what my teachers stressed to me, is it's an innocent misunderstanding. But once I did understand it, and I catch myself in some, you know, downward spiraling thinking, you can pop out of it at any moment. You don't even have to finish the sentence. And so you can start your day over at any moment. The snow globe settles as soon as we stop like trying to shake everything up. And it kind of resets itself. And I've been able to pop out of a really bad mood or insight is so brilliant at resetting things. And you go, it was a misunderstanding, or that's where my keys are. I've been looking all day. Like, as soon as I like settle down, then you remember the name of that famous movie star you were trying to remember the name of. You know, it's like the moment we slow down, then you know, the healing can happen.
Let's dig into that, because you talked about fear and, you know, you talked about all the things that you went through. So I'm pretty sure you had some fear in your life. And, you know, one of my favorite concepts is, you know, fear only exists in one place, your mind. And you were pretty much homeless over the cat taking a dump. So, I mean, we see how, you know, how dramatic fear can play. And I think a lot of people struggle with that as they start to think about the worst case scenario and they go through all these things. You know, you being through what you've been through, how do you deal with that fear? I mean, that was a great example. What advice could you give our listeners to deal with that fear that's in their minds?
Well, I'm really glad you said that, that it's only in the mind. And one of my colleagues was, I was listening to a podcast he'd done this morning, and he was talking about how we're really good at thingifying things, you know, like fear is a really great example. We've now made it a thing. And because I'm a very responsible kind of person, now I have to do something about it. But he was saying, like, if you can't put it in a box, it's not a thing, right? Mm-hmm. I can put the cat in a box. I can put a chair in a box. I can put, you know, my books in a box. But you can't put fear in a box. You can't put anxiety in a box. So it's not a thing. It's actually made of thought, which is some kind of spiritual energy. And I have no idea what I'm saying right now, but it's like flowing through my mind, right? And once I saw that, the mentor who put these ideas together, his famous quote is, if only people could learn not to be afraid of their own experience, that alone would change the world.
Yeah.
And once I learned not to be afraid of my own experience, that experience that's happening in my mind, it changed everything, because it's just not, my perspective changed. I realized I'd, all those years of the PTSD, I'd actually been torturing myself with my own thinking. Those guys who hurt me, they're long gone. I wasn't even thinking about them much anymore. I was thinking about the reactions and responses of people and why it wasn't fair and all that kind of stuff. So I was actually creating my own torture. And once I saw that I'm the only person doing that, that's freedom, because then I'm not a victim of the circumstances anymore. I'm not a victim of what happened to me. I don't even have to be a victim of my own thinking.
Yeah, I love that. And you know, that you hear that saying, a coward dies a million deaths, because they think about all the things, the ways that they're going to die. And I truly believe that, you know, when we let fear overtake us, you know, fear will keep us exactly where we are. We're afraid to move forward. So I'm glad you've overcome that. I'm glad you've come to the realization of where it's at. One other thing, as we kind of wrap up here, you talked a little bit about gratitude. Have you reached the point now that, you know, that you show some form of gratitude for those things that happen to you in some way?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't wish them on anybody, but I'm grateful for the lessons I learned from it, for sure. You know, 'cause this is really twisted, but at the beginning I was kind of upset that I didn't have any scars, you know, like, they didn't leave me with any juicy scars. I mean, I've got a few x-rays, but, you know, and so I'm grateful I didn't have any scars. I'm grateful I'm not in a wheelchair, because I could have been. I'm grateful for the people, the amazing people that have helped me over the years. I'm grateful that now I'm able to turn it all around and share it with other people and to watch other people get well, you know, to watch the light bulb go in for them, to see that, you know, they're not their thoughts, they're not their circumstances, and to be able to share that. I feel incredible gratitude for being alive and having a healthy body and a healthy mind is an amazing gift, and to be able to enjoy that. Gratitude's a great way to explain that.
Well, great. Hannah, what a great conversation. Our listeners have gotten so many powerful insights from your story. Thank you so much for sharing them. Can you tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you, how they can find your book, and how they can reach out to you?
Sure. Thank you. I have a website. It's my name, and it's hannahstudley.com. It's spelled C-H-A-N-A-S-T-U-D-L-E-Y. I have a Facebook group that's called TMS Chronic Pain and the Three Principles, which is the ideas I've been talking about. I have two books. The first one is called The Myth of Low Self-Esteem. It's the book about trauma. And my second book that just came out is called Painless. It's a novel about a chronic pain adventure novel, kind of about the mind-body connection. They're both on Amazon. And I've actually just started a book club. I've got a second one starting now, because the ideas in the second book, people have found them so impactful that we're actually meeting and discussing the ideas in the book. So I'm just starting a new book club as well. So and just, you know, look me up on Facebook. That's probably the best way to find me too. So, great. Yeah.
Well, thanks again, Hannah. We really appreciate it. I know our listeners got a lot of great insights from you, and wishing you the best and all the best luck in the world. Thank you.
Thank you. It's been an honor.
Thank you for listening to the On Lucky Sperm Club podcast. We would also like to thank our sponsors, I Got Smarter, Goals Elevated. No matter what your goals are, I Got Smarter is the program to help you achieve them once and for all. If you like this episode of the Unlucky Sperm Club podcast, you'll love my book, The Unlucky Sperm Club, available at Amazon and Audible. Help your friends and family get lucky too by sharing this show with them. If you'd like to connect with me personally, please go to nelsontressler.com. Remember, never let your past poison your potential or your life's purpose. Until next time, be lucky.